Well, welcome to Relationship Revelations. My name is Sheila Grace Harvey, and today we're actually going to be talking more about how to move into grace and forgiveness as we have more of that Christ energy coming on the planet. How can we move into that place of greater loving? And I think that sometimes we think that grace is something that we have to earn, but I don't think it's that at all. And I have a lovely quote from John Roger who says, "We can, through the consciousness of grace, dissolve all things. Grace is when God, the supreme light, the one light, extends a dispensation to us so that those things that have been out of balance in our life can be balanced instantly," which means it's not earned, it's given to us by God's dispensation, which I think is probably quite a relief, really, because I think many people don't feel worthy enough to have God's grace, and we are worthy. And talking of grace, I don't know how many of you listen to Athena on a Wednesday. She's on at 8 o'clock, and I think her title is, Commander Ashtar, Lady Athena. And I was joking with her the other day. I wasn't quite sure whether to salute her or curtsy to her, but she is an absolutely gorgeous, loving being, and she has tremendous wisdom. So it would be good to catch her show. But I was talking with her last week, and I've been really feeling like my energy's been really shifting over these last few weeks. And I know for me it's moving into greater trusting and loving and a lot more joy. And I just, you know, one of those kind of throwaway lines that you say, you know, I say, my middle name's really Grace. And she said, well, actually it should be. And, you know, my actual name is Joan, Sheila Joan Harvey, and she did the numerology for me, and she said that Joan was sort of added to a four, and it was like, you know, really that kind of hard work. I sort of say like hard yakka, where you have to really work for everything, and it's a lot more that old, what I call that old energy of tough, hard, and difficult. And I said, well, maybe it's time to let go of that old Joan of Arc energy where we feel we have to go out and fight to get what we want. Anyway, Grace is... you know, I've just noticed a difference in just shifting that, and I've never changed my name before, but it felt like new energy, new me, new name. So I have now got Grace, my middle name, and I'm really happy with that. And, you know, one of the things I find is I'm always very curious about other people and their journey, and loved hearing Athena telling me, you know, what she'd been doing over the years. And I know that people often ask me how I've arrived at where I am now in terms of the spiritual work that I do. And I was having a think back to when I was really kind of conscious of God. And I know that I've had things where I've remembered things about Jesus when I was a lot smaller, but there's a lot of my earlier life I actually don't remember. And I think some of that could have been, you know, being brought up with an older sister who, you know, used to be quite nasty to me and beat me up and all sorts of things. So it was, there are kind of gaps in my memory. But if you were to ask me what was my kind of first conscious memory of having to be sent to church, and my sister and I used to have to go to church every Sunday. And this was probably, I remember when I was about 9 or 10, and I used to think, they're not going to church. Now, hang on a second. They're not going, but we have to. It's supposed to be good for us, but they don't think it's good enough for them. So right there was some part of me that never quite lined up with that. And the only way that I managed to get through all the church services I was sent to is up the hill on the way to the church was a sweet shop. And just about 95% of my contribution, you know, the collection money, used to go in sweets, and I used to sit there in church, eating away, thinking, I can't wait for this to end. And you know that lovely expression that Christ said, suffer not the little children to come to me? And I used to sit there thinking, I'm sure he didn't mean suffer little children, but that's exactly how I felt at the time. So fortunately, at some point, I think I was about 14, we moved into a completely new area. My father moved around a lot, so... And they didn't insist that I went to church. So the next kind of experience that I had would have been when I was 18. And I had a boyfriend, and we were going to get married. And we went off. He was an actor, which I in those days thought was terribly exciting. And we were moving around with a new show for a new theater that was opening. And I remember we went to Nottingham as part of the tour. Anyway, we meet... these people that we're staying with for the week. And I remember going up to our room, and we were very tired because we'd had a long journey. And I remember getting under the eiderdown, and he got on the top, and I pulled it. And the whole of the eiderdown sort of split at one end. And you know when you're about 18, things mortify you when you do something, and you think, oh, my God, what have I done? And I was just totally mortified. Well, God knows why, because I've never carried one since, but I did have a little, you know, little sewing kit, and I remember going through and doing the tiniest little thread and sewing it all up, and it just looked like one of the seams on the eiderdown. Anyway, I thought, come on, let's go down, and we went downstairs, and Pauline and Bill, who were the host and the hostess, and we got chatting, and we had a cup of tea with them, and she said, you know, I'm a medium, you know. I said, oh, really? She said, oh, and so is Bill. I said, oh, really fascinating. And she said, you know, Sheila, she said, I think you're very good with your hands, like with fine needlework. And I thought, oh, my goodness, she knows. Well, of course, she didn't know. And a few days later, we laughed about it. It was very, very funny. But anyway, she said, look, we're going to a service tonight. Would you like to come along with us? So we did. And as we're driving along to the service, we passed a churchyard. And she said three or four names. And she just turned around. And she said, oh, there be customers. And I just loved this woman. I thought she was such a joyful person. And when we got to the church service, sure enough, the people whose names she had got, their relatives, loved ones, were there wanting sort of some comfort and some message. And I guess for many years, I probably thought, well, I was a spiritualist because I wasn't really into anything else. And it seemed like something that, you know, you got a message and gave you hope. And I thought that was wonderful. Anyway, it was around about when I was 27, and my mother died, and of course I was devastated. My mother was one of those people who was incredibly unconditionally loving, and I'm very, very grateful that I've had her in my life, because I don't know that all of us at, you know, different times in our life have really felt that we're just totally loved, and I knew she totally loved me, and I think that is one of the greatest gifts that any of us can give to another human being. Anyway, I went to the spiritualist church, and I get some, you know, my mother nearly always came through, and so I studied to be a medium. And what I discovered was that when I'd go anywhere, there'd be a few people around or whatever, you'd be like, oh, come on, tell us what's going to happen. And everybody wanted to know about relationships, about money, about jobs. And it didn't take me too long before I thought, my goodness, these people are handing over responsibility of their lives to me. They want me to tell them about how to live their life, and I felt that that didn't really sit very comfortably with me, and especially as I'd always felt that the whole idea of the spiritualist church and mediumship was to really prove beyond a shadow of a doubt to us all that there was life after death. So I was on a trip after that when I had that question in my mind, and it's always a good idea if you want your next step is to ask, you know, what's next for me, because it's like when, you know, you knock on a door, the door opens, and I opened that door, and I happened to be, I'd been in LA at that time, and I happened to be going back to Sydney on a trip, and I met up with an old friend of mine, and we were chatting, and she was saying about this thing she was doing, and it was with John Roger and MSIA and the movement of spiritual inner awareness, and she was going on and on and on about it, and she said, you know, if you work with John Roger, you don't have to be reincarnated. And this voice said, I'm not coming back. And I went, oh my goodness, who was that? And I looked around and I realized that I had said that. I wasn't coming back. So I thought, oh, well, I'll go and check this out. So I went along to one of the evenings and they were chanting, they were doing all these things. And it was all really new to me. And I suppose for any of us, when we're used to something and we're familiar with it, and then we try something different. I noticed for me there was resistance coming up. Oh, you know, this can't be that easy. You know, you just call in the light to the highest good and you're protected, because when you work in mediumship, you do have to protect yourself quite a bit. And I thought, gosh, it can't be that easy. And so, of course, I had quite a lot of resistance. Anyway, I was doing quite a bit of traveling at that time, and I went back to LA, and then I came back to Sydney on business. And this same friend I happened to be staying with, so she said, I'm going to one of these meetings coming along. And I thought, oh, okay. But you know how you go along to something, it's like, I'll go along. It's just easier to keep the peace. Anyway, I was a bit jet-lagged, so I think I slept through most of it, so it was quite painless. And then about a week or so later, she said, look, I'm going to do another one of these, but it's for a lady who's got cancer. We're going to do some healing for her. And I thought, well, you know, regardless of how I feel about it, I think it's a good thing to go along to. So I went along, and when we were doing a meditation, I had this kind of wonderful experience with John Roger, and he came in and he hugged me. And I thought, well, that was kind of nice. So I didn't really think too much more about it till a friend of mine said, well, you're going back to LA, and John Roger's going to be doing a Christmas seminar. Why don't you go along? So I organized to get myself a seat, and I went along, and I was in, I think, about the fifth overflow room because it was quite a popular event. And all I remember afterwards was I was late to go to a party. It was Christmas, and we'd run over, and I was trying to get out of the building, and John Roger came down with his immediate staff, and everyone kind of always stays back and gives him his space. And he went down into the foyer, and a couple of people came from outside, and he hugged them. And then the next thing, he stood in front of me, and I'm thinking, now what do I say? So I said, the first thing that came into my mind is, and that is, can I have a hug? And he did. And they say, never hug a master unless you're ready for your life to change. And my life did change. And I have been working with John Roger for well over 25 years now. And I have never found anything that has worked better for me. And I just hope that for all of you, that you find what works for you, because not everything is for everybody. Working with John Roger isn't with everybody. Some people work directly with the Christ. Some people are into Buddha. It doesn't really matter, but it's like find that place inside of you to find what resonates for you, because I really do believe that, you know, when we can have that assistance that we need to really connect back with God. And, of course, we can do it directly, but sometimes having someone else who knows the way, who's a little bit further ahead and can show the way, can be very, very, very valuable. So, yeah, so basically there I was, committed, very involved, found something that was really, really important for me, and very, very grateful ever since. And, of course, grace, along with grace, really is gratitude. And I found a John Roger quote from his book with Paul Kay, The Rest of Your Life, Finding Repose in the Beloved. And he kind of describes the ease of grace very beautifully. And so I thought I would like to read this to you so that you can maybe get a greater understanding, like I do, from reading this about grace. You enter into grace by loving God. Once you start to love God, grace is always present. Living in grace is not hard. If it's starting to be hard, you're under the law. Giving up the struggle of going for grace might be something, or the very thing, that releases you to experience it. Grace isn't something that you go for as much as it's something you allow. However, you may not know grace is present because you have conditioned the way you want it to come, for example. Like thunder or lightning, with all the drama, rumbling, and pretense of that, when in fact grace comes in very naturally, like breathing. When you receive grace, it becomes an attitude, a way of being that you maintain. One way to do this is to hold a picture in your mind that you want more of, one that uplifts you. Once the attitude is formed, it is then practiced as a conscious behavior. The body then takes over and incorporates it as a habit. We then start to walk through life, not even knowing that we're grace-filled and joyful until people notice and bring it to our attention. You're joyful because you're not preoccupied with the things that used to bother you. They're still there, but they don't bother you because you don't focus on them. With grace, nothing leaves your life. You haven't given up your mind or your experiences. You're not brainwashing yourself into some oblivion. It's just that you're focusing on what is really important to you. You are choosing a lifestyle and a behavior that brings you freedom. However, like all human beings, including Lot's wife, we have a tendency to look back. When we do, we often become paralyzed by what we see. There is no need to look back. There is no need to look anywhere except where you are. To maintain being in a state of grace, just be in a state of forgiveness, which is a place of no judgment. Historically, we can see that those human beings who lived in a state of grace as a statement of their life became saints. My point of view is that if you're putting up with this planet and living here, you're a saint already. I'm going to repeat that sentence because I think that's great. My point of view is that if you're putting up with this planet and living here, you're a saint already. So just know you're all saints. When you live in a state of grace, when you want to tell somebody up yours, the words come out differently. People sense the grace you are extending to them when you really had all the right and authority to have them laid low. However, you withheld the striking out and grace went in its place. That's the forgiving that continues on as you maintain your loving connection. You will not finish up forgiving until your last breath. Our judgments of our past keep us tied to this world. When we're through with our work on this planet, in our last moments, our forgiveness will be, I forgive myself for all this, and then the name of God will be the next thing we utter. Isn't that beautiful? Well, you know, when we're wanting to release the past, break crystallizations, one of the things that I do find is that things just show up in your life. Things assist you. I mean, one of the things that's been happening for me over the last 2 or 3 weeks is I have just been absolutely into the movie and the soundtrack of Mamma Mia. I don't know if you've seen it. It is just so joyful and so wonderful, and it doesn't really matter what it is. We can work through some of our fixations. We can work through some of our karma just by going to a movie, and we release something at the end of it, and it's done. I remember for a long time ago, I think the last war movie I ever saw was Born on the 4th of July, because at the end of it, I felt shell-shocked, and I thought, I never want to see another war movie again. It was done for me. I didn't need to do that anymore. And for me, Mamma Mia has just been this absolutely joyful movie. And what I've been finding is, I've seen it 3 times, and I found that the first couple of times it was just incredibly, incredibly joyful. And then after that, I found all these tears coming up. And I started looking more closely at what it was. And as I mentioned earlier, my mother died when I was 27, and she was very unconditionally loving. And there is something about Meryl Streep that actually reminds me of my mother. There is a tremendous gentleness in her, and it's the essence. She seems like a really very loving, kind person. And so there was some mother-daughter stuff that I found coming up, and then there was a whole lot around relationships, a little bit about that unrequited love. I mean, even just the fact that she was so fit, and I was, you know, I've just been losing some more weight, and it's like a time to get even fitter, and got me inspired. And I just found there was just so much just in the movie and listening to the soundtrack. And I was listening a couple of days ago just to one of the songs, and I suddenly became aware of what felt like really old, old things of like longing in terms of relationships, that unrequited love, things that were unfulfilled. And I just felt, you know, inside me that it was just time to let this go. And I just went into this really deep, heartfelt prayer. And the tears came up. And it was just like, you know, Father, Mother, God, you know, just through grace, let me release this, let me lift this, let me let go of all this. I surrender up all of this stuff so that, you know, it's no longer pulling on me and for the highest good. And if there is one thing that I do know about God, is God answers our heartfelt prayers, always has and always will. So how do we move from some of the things that we've been attached to? Well, again, we do it through grace and we do it through forgiveness. So, and again, the key, the only grace is loving God. And I'm going to read another little bit from the Rest of Your Life book from John Roger. The only grace is loving God. When you are loving God, grace is extended back to you in all shapes and forms. Once you know yourself and the beloved within you, you will not strike against another human being. You will withhold the strike and keep it back, because that form of loving is once again entering into the grace. It's not only the grace of loving God, it's the grace of loving each person as God incarnate. Once you receive the grace of loving God, That loving starts to purify you as a prince or princess of the higher consciousness. You start to once again come into the royalty, the purple majesty of your being. And negativity in and around you is transmuted into a higher form. If you are loving God, and I mean really loving God, by being centered and filled with that, rather than being preoccupied with worldly concerns, then grace abounds with you, and whatever you do becomes a blessing. It just turns out right. People actually rejoice that you are around. When you are living in grace, you release the self-centered concerns of the ego, and you disregard what moves you into upset and suffering. Instead, you turn to fill yourself with God's abundance, the keynote of which is loving. There is a spirit that is independent from materiality. That spirit has often been called, amongst other names, the spirit of truth. I've often just referred to it very simply as the beloved, because it's always been that with me. Just always that. Always, forever and ever. When you connect with the beloved, you walk and live in grace. As we connect more deeply with the beloved, we become clearer. Although invisible and intangible, paradoxically, we can somehow feel it with our subtle senses. When we are in the company of the beloved, we're in touch with the divine, the unconditional essence that is our true self. As we maintain that connection, whatever we do is loving and becomes for the highest good. It cannot be anything else. When we lose touch with the beloved, what we do may be well-intentioned, but it will usually be motivated from our ego, which is another way of saying that it will have a conditional quality. Perhaps we're looking for recognition or approval. If it were easy to let go and trust the beloved, the multitudes would have done it. I can only tell you that it is well worth the effort. Sometimes the path that leads us to the beloved may need a little repair work. Maybe the bridge of our awareness is crumbled and needs to be restored. Perhaps the weeds of our accumulated things have grown across the path and need to be cut back. Maybe the obstacles of our resistance are in the way and need to be removed. Perhaps you've separated yourself with a wall or a moat, and now you feel you need to dismantle that which has appeared to defend you from the perceived outrages of the world. Simply recognize that the walls have imprisoned you and that your allegiance to material things has been a fictional sense of security. Your true security is found in the freedom of the soul. You can drop everything that is not speaking truth inside of you now and return to the divinity that awaits with infinite patience for your homecoming. A prayer of high consciousness would be one where we ask from deep within us to turn to the beloved, to the Christ within, the God center, to really turn to that. Yet the false self doesn't want to do it because it dies when that action takes place. So it hangs on with its envy and emotional disturbances, masking the true self, which is our love, our compassion, our joy, our knowing, our right action, our right living, and the sharing of our spiritual love. This is what we all want. We all want to manifest our true self. Many people are becoming aware of their true selves, their divinity. They say simply, "I now know." Their reward is to awaken. When we awaken ourselves and each other, I in you, you in me, we do indeed love because the beloved is in us. And the only thing that sets us apart is the personality. This awakening is a celebration, for at long last you have stepped into who you really are. The angels up there, and there are angels up there, single out every time someone says, "I am the Son of God, I am living love, I am the beginning and the end, I am all that has ever existed and that will ever exist." When you manifest this, then you are also the light and the way. Jesus said that these things he did, you too will do, and even greater. How are you going to do them unless you become a son of God, unless you know divine love, human compassion, and empathy? The human being is one of the greatest glories of all creation because God resides at the center of each one. Wow. Well, I guess having Christ and Jesus as a role model is a pretty good one. It's who else would we model ourselves on but the one who demonstrates the unconditional living love. So with grace often goes forgiveness, because grace is something we don't have to earn. Grace is something that is a dispensation for us. And the way that we can get out of our heads, that mental sort of endless loop that we can often get into, break kind of crystallizations, let go of the past, because, you know, we can move into that wonderful Christed energy of grace, and that's a way to live in the joy, in the loving, knowing that all can be given to us. When you find the kingdom of heaven, all else is given to us. And the kingdom of heaven is at hand, which means it's within each and every one of us. So the way to move into the grace, which is given to us, but for us to know that we're worthy, is to let go of the judgments. And Christ is the one I feel is the forgiveness one. Christ is, I always remember Christ saying, the sins of today are enough. Let's not take into tomorrow anything from today. So we don't need to take any negativity. We don't need to take any judgments. We don't need to take anything that no longer works for us, because it's time for us to come into that present where right in this moment now, we are absolutely fine. When we go into the past, when we go into the future, we can get into worry, we can get into concern, we can get into judgments, we can, oh, what about this, what about that? I mean, even right now, if you're listening and you're thinking about something else you have to do, you can't do it unless you actually go and do it right this minute. So it may be it's about, can you come present? Can you bring your mind present? And this is something that often I think we do need to do as training. I know when I was doing some facilitation with Insight Seminars in my early days with them, you know, sometimes we do things like, especially if we did anything around money, the energy of the room used to go really quite crazy, because people have a lot of issues around money. And I knew that all I had to do was to stay present, but sometimes when a lot of energy is moving around, it can be difficult. Our mind goes off. We think, oh, I've got to do that, or I must remember to buy that when I'm out shopping, or, oh, my goodness, I've got to go and do that while I'm out in the kitchen, or, oh, gosh, you know, I need to wash those clothes, otherwise I won't have them for tomorrow. You know, we constantly can go off on tangents and think about all of these different things, and we're not fully 100% right now. So, you know, if there are anything like that, sometimes it's a good idea, you know, just to keep a piece of paper next to you. If you think of something, just write it down so the mind can know, oh, you know what, you've heard. The mind often goes round and round in circles because it thinks it hasn't heard us. It's the same thing if actually you're with people who constantly keep, you know, repeating things over and over and over again. They feel like they haven't been heard. So all you have to do is say, you know, I thought I heard you say da 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 da. Is that accurate? And they go, oh, yeah. Then they can relax because they know that they have been heard. And I think listening is a really very high form of loving, because don't we all need someone to listen to us, somebody to be there for us through our trials and our tribulations? And let's face it, we all have our moments. And I certainly know I have people that I can go to when I'm working through or feeling in difficulty or feeling that I'm stuck in something. And obviously the other thing I do is meditate, or in what we do is we do an active form of meditation, which is what we call spiritual exercises, where we do a chant, because sometimes it's very hard for your mind just to go completely blank or completely still, because the mind's not designed to do that. So having a little mantra can give you something just to hold on to. And if you don't have one of the ones that we use as a generic kind of mantra is Anihu, H-U, a Sanskrit word for God, and Ani sort of brings in an empathy. You can just do Hu. You can do H-U. These are just Sanskrit words for God that you can just chant, just to give your mind something to focus on and something to practice holding, so that you can come into that present moment right now. And I think that peace is easier when you're in the now, where you just, right now, just breathe and just relax and just know everything right now is fine. Now, if you are holding on to things, then forgiveness is the way to go. It's the most wonderful, wonderful thing is to be able to come into a place of forgiveness and letting go. And again, sometimes people have some misconceptions about forgiveness. I've heard people say things like, someone's a mass murderer. How can I condone what they do by forgiving them? Or it means I'm agreeing with somebody if I'm forgiving them. And actually, that's not my point of view on that at all. My point of view is that if I am holding something negative about somebody else, and if I, it's usually because I made a judgment of somebody else that they've done something that I don't like or I think is wrong. If I'm holding that inside me, it's negative energy that's inside me. It's not shifting what the other person has done. It's not going to make any difference to them whether I hold negative or positive energy inside me, but it will hurt me because it's taking up energy to hold that. So forgiveness is not about necessarily condoning what somebody's done. It doesn't mean you're in agreement with what they're doing. What it actually means is you're letting go of that inside you. I love, there's a story of the two monks who are walking along, and they come to a river, and there's a woman there trying to get across. And in this particular order, they're not allowed to touch women. And one of the monks picks the woman up, wades across the water, puts her on the other side. And a couple of days later, the other monk, who's been thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking about this, is obviously very angry that he did something that he felt he shouldn't have done. And eventually, the monk says, asks him about what's going on, and he said, "Well, you picked up that woman, and we're not allowed to do that. It's wrong." And the other monk said to him, "Yes, I picked her up and carried her across the water. You've been holding and carrying her for several days." And I thought, wow, that's so profound, because how often do we carry something and it goes round and round inside of us, and the only person who's suffering is us? I mean, if you've ever had an argument with somebody that you're living with or in the same house with, and all day long you're going, I've done that, and you keep thinking about it, and it keeps going round in your mind and round and round and round, and they come home and they're in a great space, and you're still in this really horrid space of remembering all the details of what happened or the disagreement or whatever it is, and they've gone off and had a wonderful day because they've just gotten in the moment, got involved in what they're doing, and they're completely forgotten about it. So really the only person we hurt is ourselves. So it doesn't really make sense to keep holding stuff inside. So the way we do forgiveness is that we're not forgiving the action. We're actually forgiving the judgment that we have made. So for instance, if you're on a diet and you've said you're not going to have any sweet things, and all of a sudden now you have just had this wonderful tub of ice cream with all of the bits on top of it and all, the works. You might as well go for the works if you're going to do it. And then all of a sudden you say, "Oh my God, I just had this ice cream. I said I wasn't going to eat anything like that. Oh, I never ever seem to be able to do what I say I'm doing. I get on the scales, I'll put on 2 pounds, and this kind of endless loop of judgment comes up. So really, having the ice cream wasn't any big deal. But it's what you've told yourself that becomes the big deal. And karma, and the reason we keep coming back is because of our judgment. We completely, continually judge ourselves. And that is the sin. If there's any sin on this planet, it's the judgments. So the best way to let go of judgments is, to do, like, I forgive myself for judging myself, or I forgive myself for judging John Smith or whoever the person is for, so that you can actually kind of let go. Let go of those things that you've been holding on to. And, look at getting free within you, because freedom means being in grace. It means being in the loving. Now, loving and judgment are two opposing things. You cannot be judging and be in the loving. So, before I've said that loving is a choice, are you willing to choose to come back into the loving? Can you forgive yourself and others and come back into the loving? I don't know whether you're aware, but most live television and radio shows, with the exception of this one, they often have a delete button. So if somebody swears or says something, that there's just a very short delay, and they can beep it out so that it doesn't go to air. And isn't that a wonderful thing? Now, we actually have something very similar that we can do, because it takes approximately 60 seconds from us saying something or thinking something before it kind of really kind of gets into the kind of into our mind or into the universe, as it were. And so we have a little 60-second button. So if we say something about somebody, we can go, and the word you say is deflect. We have a 60-second deflect button. Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of like that, because one of the things that I know is, if I'm moving from something that I have been doing that hasn't worked for me into something that does, there is still sometimes a gap in there where it takes a little while for me to move to one and the other. And the reason why we call it awareness is because I start becoming more aware of the things that I do that don't work. And the good news for me, and I think for most of us, is that we start catching it sooner. So if we start catching it sooner, and then each time we catch it sooner and catch it sooner, then eventually we'll catch it just as we're doing it, and then we will catch it before we do it. And, of course, that's what we're looking for. So, and often people say to me, oh, you know, I'm still doing this thing that, you know, it's negative, and I'm still judging, and I'm still doing this. And I said, well, how long do you do that for? And whereas, you know, I can, in an example for me, I mean, one of the things that I was working with at one point was I was doing a lot of comparisons with other people. And guess what, when you compare, I bet you always come up short. I bet you never feel better when you compare yourself with somebody, which is why I always think you need balance. And if you're going to compare yourself with somebody that, you know, you don't feel as good, then, you know, balance it up with somebody that makes you feel better. I mean, that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is just to stay in the forgiveness and the loving. So, when I was aware of the fact that I was doing some comparisons, what I noticed was that I would kind of judge myself about it. And then I started becoming more aware of how long I would hold on to that judgment for, or it would go through my mind. And, you know, it could be a couple of weeks. I mean, my self-esteem was really low a number of years ago. Things could take a long time, and I would run them through in my mind and through and through and through. And it was, gosh, you know, it was quite challenging. Anyway, then I find myself, instead of taking a couple of weeks, it might be only 10 days. And then I notice it might be 9 days. Now, it would be very easy to judge myself and say, oh, I'm still doing it. But I looked at the good and I went, you know what? I've shortened the time. That's great. So I started looking for what was working, not what wasn't working. And this obviously is another key. With grace, I always believe, comes gratitude. And if we can get into that gratitude of what we do well, what we focus then on then is the good things about ourselves and the things how we're improving, not the things that we feel we aren't doing very, very well in. So when, you know, you find yourself doing something and you say, and you judge, you have a deflect button. Now, if you don't quite catch the deflect button, because let's face it, we're in training here, and just like when a little child is learning to walk, you know, you don't give them a hard time because they fall over. You just encourage them to get back up, and, you know, it's a process. Eventually, they will walk. So as we're all learning to be more loving Christs in our lives, we're focusing on what we can do that works for us. So we're focusing on the good. We're focusing on the loving. That's what we can do. So we miss the deflect button. Okay, so the next thing we get into is forgiveness. These are just keys that are very, very easy and practical, that if you just keep doing these little things will assist you to move past some of the things that we do that are the habitual negative limiting patterns and beliefs and habits. So we're moving into really good, strong, loving, caring patterns with grace and ease and joy and loving. That's what we're working towards. We can do forgiveness. I forgive myself for judging myself, for beating up on myself, for not being kinder to myself. Forgive myself for judging John Smith for being rude to me, for not being warm and loving towards me. And I forgive myself for judging myself for not being warm and loving to myself at times. Because I think we often find that we can often see in ourselves something that we're picking up in other people. So we have the opportunity to do some forgiveness. Now, when we say something that's negative, it takes about 25 positives to eradicate it. So from my point of view, it's quicker and easy to do the deflect. So I really do, I'm into grace and ease and doing things easily. However, we pass that and we've got the opportunity then maybe to do some affirmations. Because let's neutralize that negativity. Let's do what we can to come back into the positivity. So in other words, if you say, oh, I hate myself, you might want to say, I love myself. But if you don't feel that you're loving yourself at the moment you're doing it, you might think, well, that's not true for me. So maybe you could say something like, I'm learning to love myself more. So that it's a work in progress. So that you can do that for 25 times just to bring yourself. And one of the things I find is I do these loving statements. And it's something that I do at any point when I'm not feeling loving towards myself. I get out a few affirmations and I just do them over and over. In fact, it takes about 1,000 to kind of reboot your computer at one sitting. You don't necessarily have to do it 1,000 times all the time after that. But if you do 1,000 affirmations in one sitting, it's a pretty powerful thing. Reboots your computer and starts getting you into a different space. So, and affirmations give your mind something to think about. You know, instead of thinking of something that you haven't done right, why wouldn't you keep programming something that's great? Putting some affirmations on a tape and endlessly playing it in the background is a lot more positive than what we generally tend to do. So let's just do a little meditation on forgiveness so that we just have an opportunity just to let go right now of anything that we're holding on to. So just take a deep breath in and let it go. And preferably not doing this while you're driving. So if you're sitting or lying comfortably, just take another deep breath in and just let it go. And let's just ask that Mother, Father, God, the presence of the Christ to be with us right now. And we just ask that anything that we can let go of, any karma, negativity, any imbalance, anything that no longer works for us, we're here to surrender up to you, God, anything that can just be dissolved back into the nothingness from whence it came. Just take another deep breath in and just let out any negativity, anything that disturbs you. And right now, just take a moment to think if there's anything that comes to mind. Maybe something you've held against yourself. Whatever that is, just inside yourself, or you can say it out loud. I forgive myself for judging myself. For, and then whatever it is, whether it's being unkind to yourself, being unloving, not taking greater care of yourself, whether it wasn't sticking to that diet you were going to do, or give up smoking, or any of those things, just whatever it is right now, just I forgive myself for judging myself and just whatever comes up for you. And now if there is anyone else that you have any difficulty with, or you have felt negative towards, or have felt unloving. Again, just as you think of the situation, now's the time to forgive it and let go. I forgive myself for judging and whatever the person's name is, for whatever it is that you think that they did. And just take a moment to forgive yourself for judging them. Just take another deep breath in and let it go. And some of you may have found over the time that you may have some judgments against God or Christ. How could the world be in this state if God was loving, if Christ was loving? So maybe it's time just to let go of those judgments. I forgive myself for judging God, for judging Christ, for all the things I see in the world that are negative and unloving. And I forgive myself for judging myself for, you know, any time I feel I've been inappropriate, that I felt stupid, that I've done silly things. Forgive myself for judging myself for not keeping my word and doing the things I've said I'm going to do. Just anything else that just shows up, just forgive the judgment. Let it go. You're bigger than these judgments. And remember, there is nothing that God cannot handle. So give it all up. Let it go. And just know that we're divine. So I forgive myself for forgetting that I'm divine. We're all divine beings. And just, I forgive myself for judging myself for not feeling worthy. Worthy to have the grace of God be extended to me. Worthy to be loved, to be loving. Forgive myself for judging myself if I don't feel that I deserve all the goodness that life has to offer. Forgive myself for judging myself for all the things that I've ever done in my life and existences. Hey, let's just give it all up. Let's start new in this moment right now and ask the Christ to come in to assist us to let go, to let God, and come into that Christed loving, pure white light energy. Just see it surrounding, filling all of you, every part of you, right now. And just know that peace that's present is when we let go and we just come right into this present moment now. Peace is just grace and loving, light. And know that you are blessed. We are all blessed. We are all the beloved. And so it is. And just take another deep breath in. And just let out with your breath anything else you could have been holding on to. Just take another deep breath in. And just let it go. And as you take another deep breath in, just come into that grace and the loving of your heart. And know that you can come back into that place at any time. So know that forgiveness is something that you can do at any time. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do each night just before you go to bed to clear out the old and just, you know, so you're free at night to sort of just be with Christ, be with God, just be with the beloved, and you can just be free. And one of the things that I know is that if I want to be in grace, then stay in the gratitude. An attitude of gratitude is an antidote to negativity, and I think that's a very, very powerful statement. I've heard John Rogers say it often. The attitude of gratitude is an antidote to negativity. So, you know, the thing that I find ironic is that if there are, you know, a whole lot of things in our life that are going well, say 95%, and there's this 5% little of things that we're working on and that we're judging or whatever, we will focus 100% on that 5%. And guess what that means? We're 100% focused on negativity. But there's 95% of really good things. And yet we, as human beings, tend to focus not on the good, but on the negative. So my suggestion is, focus on the gratitude. That's why affirmations just give us something positive to focus on. the gratitude can assist us really to stop that mind chatter. It gives us, again, the mind like something to focus on. And one of the things that I find very useful is making a list of what you're grateful for so that you can put your focus on gratitude, because what you focus on, you create. I have a lovely list of gratitude. I just love it. I read it often. You know, and I even have a book that I put all the things like I'm grateful for, lovely quotes from like J.R. John from books, wonderful masters from different times like Rumi or all these different ones. If I find something that really resonates and I really love it, then what I do is I put it in a book. So I've got something that, you know, if for some reason I'm just feeling a little below par or something, I open this book and I look through it and it's lovely. Or somebody said something really lovely about me in a card, I might put the card in. So that there are lovely little things that I can look at and read that help get me back into a more loving space. And I have things like, I am grateful for all the assistance I'm receiving to walk through this lifetime in grace. I'm grateful I am blessed. I'm grateful I'm releasing excess weight and toning my body. I'm grateful I can minister to myself and others. I'm grateful I am loving myself more and more. I am grateful for divine guidance. I am grateful my life is easy and graceful. I am grateful that God directs my life and is my partner. I am grateful to be doing God's work on this planet. So coming into the gratitude is just really, really lovely way. And you know, some of the things we've talked to today, they're just so simple. Forgiveness. Remembering to deflect when we say something negative, doing some affirmations to give our mind a focus, or chanting like the NIHU or the HU to give our mind something else to focus on. Gratitude, what we're grateful for. You know, so often we look for fulfillment in the world, but fulfillment isn't inside of us, it's in the inner kingdom. So, you know, if we find ourselves getting caught up in what others think, or we're looking for approval, or we're needy and we need loving, go inside. Look to your own self. Look to your own approval. Look for your own loving, your own respect, because you cannot have out here what you don't have inside. So it's a kind of a dichotomy. In order to be successful, we need to feel successful inside, and then we bring that into us. So we're like a magnet. Program your magnet with what you want to attract in your life. If you want peace, if you want happiness, prosperity and freedom, then, you know, program that magnet inside. Be those things. Come into the peace. Come into the happiness. Do the things that make you feel joyful. If you go and see Mamma Mia 3 times or whatever it is, or if there is a piece of music that makes you feel joyful, or if you go somewhere, you know, a place in nature, or if standing on the beach with water lapping on your feet makes you feel joyful, what is it makes you feel joyful? The other thing that I found with the Mamma Mia soundtrack is I've really been singing a lot more, and singing was something that I realized many, many years ago. It must be about 15 years ago. I realized that singing made me feel joyful, and I hadn't done it. And you know, we probably all have stories of why we don't do the things that we, you know, were joyful. I remember when I was about 7 years of old, and I had moved to a new school, and we had these ghastly assemblies in the morning, and we were all lined up, and the headmaster, who was terribly tall and at that stage looked terribly ferocious. And, you know, we used to have to learn these hymns. We didn't have hymn books, and we had to learn them. And I was very close to the front, and we were learning this new hymn. And I don't know whether I was singing out of tune or whether it was somebody around me, but he singled me out in front of the whole school, brought me out, told me that I was singing out of tune, hit me on the back of on my back quite hard, and, of course, I was mortified. And then when I went into my form, the form mistress then brought me out in front of the form, in front of the class, hit me on the back again and said, "How could you disgrace me in front of the whole school?" So I think, needless to say, for a long time I didn't open my mouth and sing very much. And then I realized, you know, as I said, about 15 years ago, that I wasn't singing. So I went and took singing lessons. And I found that it was something that I was very joyful about. And somehow I've gotten out of the habit again. And just being listening to the Mamma Mia soundtrack, because they were songs that I remember the first time round, I can sing, and I've got the words to it, and I'm singing, and I'm dancing with it, and it's just something that brings me so much joy. So, you know, blessings on you all, because let's get into the joy. Find your joy. And as I finish, I'd like to just another quote from Grace, from JR, because I think being in Grace, I think, you know, is such an important thing. And he says, in this new age, you have infinite opportunity to move into the higher qualities. Keep enthusiasm present in all of your activities. Anticipate joy at every moment. And always maintain a sense of being grateful for all of your blessings. Being grateful means maintaining the awareness that God is entirely present in every moment of your life, and that you don't have to go anywhere to experience the glory of God's presence. When you are in that type of awareness and cooperation, all things flow to you, and you experience a sense of upliftment and peace. The joy of it is that you can turn to the positive direction at any moment, and the joy will be entirely present for you. When the joyous spirit is present, you can't do enough good works. Your cooperation is full. Your love is manifest. Your light shines forth into the world. You become of service to everyone you meet. You spread the light consciousness everywhere you go. Your mere presence brings balance and joy to people, and you don't even have to say a word. The light will move through you to others and bring them what is necessary and beneficial. To live in grace and maintain your awareness of the spirit within is a beautiful service. If you do nothing but that, you are a light unto this world. That was from the Way Out book. And blessings to you this week, that if you do nothing but just hold in the grace, maintain your awareness of the spirit, you are a light unto this world. Beirush Beishan, the blessings already are.